Tonight's story is about surgery in a third world country. After my first year of medical school in 1962, I thought I would look into surgery and see if that might be a possible career for me. I returned to Baltimore, Maryland, where I'd gone to college at Johns Hopkins, and I knew that four blocks from the campus was a small hospital. I'd never been in the institution. I went down there and applied for a job in the operating room, and I got a job. They hired me as a scrub nurse. My job was to lay out all the sterile instruments needed for every procedure and then hand them to the surgeons when they were necessary, and sometimes they'd have me come over and hold retractors. So I got to see a lot of surgery. It was a pleasant surprise to learn that the surgeons from Johns Hopkins Hospital did their private work where I was located. So I saw some marvelous things being done. And certainly, if there was an average or the occasional less than average surgeon around, I knew the difference, who was good and who wasn't. It was also important to follow and see what the anesthesiologists were doing. They had an easier job and a lot of time to talk and talk about investments, their kids, or whatever, kept things going. But I did see that they very quickly sedated the patient, got him down to start the surgery, and then they carefully planned so they let the anesthetic wear off at the end, and the surgery would be over, and the patient would wake up shortly thereafter and have less of a risk of getting complications after that. The following summer, I thought I'd look into general medicine, and I mentioned briefly a couple times, I went to Guatemala, 10,000 feet above sea level, beautiful Mayan Indians for patients in a beautiful country, and lived with four priests and three nuns. There were occasional possible surgeries that came along, women with gallbladder attacks, but they all responded to antibiotics. Surgery wasn't indicated. Patients with cataracts, but we didn't have an eye surgeon around. I knew there was a surgeon at the local hospital 20 miles away on a beautiful lake surrounded by smoking volcanoes, but had never met the gentleman. And I did see that most of the people living there, particularly the men, had these little bumps all over their skin. Maybe you know what a keloid is. Some people, particularly people with dark skin, will have surgery and the scar will be real big and stick out, and that's called a keloid. And they all had it, but they all carried machetes that they used in the cornfields, and I figured they just got poked. But it's kind of surprising. Everybody had these scars, but nobody ever had a cut bad enough to require stitches. So that was one of the puzzles as we went along. Occasionally, there were people we tried to send to the hospital. There was a young girl with malaria and a temperature that went off the chart, past 107 degrees. She refused to go to the hospital with her mother. And so we took turns watching her at night, pumping pills into her. Her temperature broke at night. The next day she was fine. We sent her on her way, and her malaria resolved. There was a young boy who was carried in that had draining wounds all over. He probably had staph infections, and he probably was going to die no matter what was done. What they did, they tied him to a chair because he couldn't sit up straight, and four men each took one leg and walked 3 miles in down the back trails. They wouldn't go to the hospital either. We wondered why. And we gave him some antibiotics and sent him on his way and never heard from him again. I'm sure he didn't survive. We did dental extractions. That's a form of surgery. And since we were the only ones that used Novocaine, people flocked in. The priests had done them initially and taught me. And the charge was 15 cents. And they'd pay the money and kiss the priest's hand. And they were happy that I was there so they could do other things in the church. And I gradually caught on. It's like riding a bicycle, getting a little rock to get them out. And I got fairly good at it. And I got my 15 cents. And to tell you the truth, I got a few kisses on the hand, too. But how are they going to know whether I'm a priest or not? So that was kind of a fun part. But still, nothing to send to the hospital. Nobody would go. And then my final month, a surgeon from Sacramento came. He was a fine gentleman. I knew he was a good surgeon. He spent a lot of time teaching me as much as he possibly could. But being a typical surgeon, if you know surgeons, he wanted to cut on somebody. He wanted to do something. It made sense. So about a week after he showed up, you got to get to know surgeons. A young girl came. Yeah, I hear you. Not too closely, at a distance. A young girl showed up. She had pain in the right side of her abdomen. It was tender to push in. If you let go, the muscles jumped and she really had pain. So what was her probable diagnosis? Appendicitis. I mean, even a second-year medical student, I was pretty sure that's what it was. And so I called the surgeon over. He agreed. We talked to the mother. She said, good, we'll go to the hospital with you, but we have to go to our village 500 feet up. Okay, we'll pick you up in half an hour. So we drove way, way up into this beautiful valley, great mountains, volcanic peaks in the distance, a huge cornfield, and a very nice home for the kind of homes they lived in. But where was the mother and where was the girl? They ran off into the cornfield. We never saw them again either. Still no surgery. Okay, it's getting into the month, another week and a half to go. And the next day, a husband and wife and two sons came in. And they explained to us that 2 years ago there was a surgeon from Sacramento, and their son, first son, only had one testicle. Well, it's not really the case. I don't think people are born without a testicle, although everything happens once somewhere. But the kid had an undescended testicle. There's usually a hernia with it. And if it's in the abdomen, the heat is so high that that testicle very quickly becomes sterile. But fortunately, you only need one to have children. And but the other problem is, if the heat lasts for many years, you can get testicular cancer like Lance Armstrong. So that one was fixed perfectly, and now 2 years later, their next kid had the same thing. Oh, that was great. They wanted surgery. So we went off beforehand and met the surgeon, and we understood quite quickly what the story was all about. He was a very, very large Spanish man. He spent 3 weeks in Miami watching surgery. He was the surgeon. That's why they didn't want to go. Who wants a guy like that to cut on you? Along the way, I did ask him about all these little scars, these keloids on the skin. And what are they? How come everybody has them? And I had learned before I went to Guatemala and briefly reading that there's a parasite there that causes things on the skin, but I didn't know what, and can go to the eyes and cause blindness. And so he called over one of the patients from the TB hospital, took a slide, put a drop of salt water, saline on it, had a microscope, took out a scalpel and said, come here. Didn't say anything else. Took the scalpel and cut the top off one of these things. No Novocaine, no explanation. Another reason why people didn't want to go to that hospital for surgery. And he dabbed it into the saline, and you look, and there were worms swimming all over the place. So that was the crazy eye worm, and I learned a lot real quick that day. A few days later, we came back for the surgery. It was a beautiful operating room, very nicely laid out. The surgeon was thrilled because Dr. Dietler and me, the two gringo great doctors from America, were there to do surgery in his hospital. And he walked around like this for the whole procedure in ecstasy. And the window was wide open because it was hot, and 15 TB patients were crowded in. They wanted to see what's going on. The door was open for the same reason, and there were 15 or 20 patients there looking in to see what was happening. And a little small lady, about 4'10", probably weighed 85 pounds, with a crisp starch outfit came in and a little hat. And she sat down, and she started dripping ether. Well, they hadn't used ether in the United States for about 3 years, so that was interesting. The smell was all over the place. Drip, 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 drip. The kid goes to sleep. Dr. Dietler proceeds to perform an absolutely marvelous procedure. I knew good surgery, and he was right up there. And I was assisting him, and the nurse with the anesthesia was in back. And every once in a while, I'd look over at the doctor. And we got to about 5 or 8 minutes before the end, and I hear the nurse behind me say, Doctore, and he turns, I see him, and he gives her a glare. You shut your mouth. This is my big day. The gringos are here. And so she kept quiet for what I think, I felt like 2 minutes, but it was probably only 20 seconds. And then a little more forcefully, she said, Doctore, and he looked again, and he said, See? And she looked up, El es muerte. Pat. Dietler, the kid's dead. He pulled the mask off, obviously. He knew the same thing. It was drip, 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 drip. I knew something wasn't possibly right, but I'm a second-year medical student, whatever. And so I listened to his heart and lungs. There was nothing. He was not breathing. There was no heartbeat. Dr. Dietler did what we were taught then and is still appropriate. He made a fist and went thump on the kid's chest. We waited 4 seconds. The kid took a deep breath. We listened again. His heart was beating. He finished the procedure. The kid went back to the room. The next day he was discharged, and the next day we saw him running around playing with the kids. That's the end of my story, and thank you for listening.